Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Hello, this is the Brown Briefly podcast and weekly radio show coming to you live from Vachon Island, Washington, in the heart of the Salish Sea, broadcasting live from the Gene Bosch Voice of Vachon studio in the uptown core of bustling and bodacious Vachon Town. Sweeping the airways of our diverse, equitable, and inclusive island community. That was the voice of our founder, Brian Brown. Together, we, the Brieflys, strive to keep Brian's brilliant flame alive by bringing you weekly episodes of intelligent, at least hopefully intelligent, discussions of current events laced with humor and empathy, and always guided by Brian's mantra of less is more, more or less. Now, let me introduce the Briefly panel, which includes our flight control board magician, retired Alaska Airlines captain, recently reelected by a landslide. Airport commissioner. But there were some write-ins.
19, I believe.
19. Who are those 19 really? People?
I know who they are.
I want to know. Is there any way to look that up? Does anybody know?
You can't find Steve. Individuals.
Call Steve Hobbs.
FOIA, no.
I think you're right, yeah.
No?
Yeah.
No,
right?
You can't find
no,
voting
record. You should
voting
be able
record.
To find the write-ins. That should be a public record.
Yeah. I think so.
I don't think you can find out how people voted.
Well, no, not who voted.
Yeah, but detached.
But who are the other people that were written in?
Oh, yeah. I understand. I thought you were going to have a hit list to go on after. Come on.
Yeah, just call me Donald.
Yeah, right. Come on.
Why did you leap to that conclusion?
Because he was an Alaska Airlines captain. Shutting off engines and, and all that.
Why wasn't that a crazy thing, that guy?
Oh, God.
Well, he's a nutcase.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah, at least he was a Horizon guy, actually. Yeah,
right. Not technically Alaska.
Not technically Alaska. Okay. Separation.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Back to reasonality here. So our legal beagle, mediator, Fulbright scholar, Politico host, Craig Bellis.
That's great to be here. You're testing us today in terms of intelligent discussion.
Yeah.
I'm trying to.
I like it. Elevate it. We'll see.
We'll see how it works. It may fall flat on its face, but we'll try it. And then part-time ferry fixer, executive director of Vachon Household, and full-time shenanigans coordinator, Amy Dreher.
Hello, good morning.
And also recently reelected in a landslide to fire commissioner.
Thank you. Yeah, it was. It was
How
good.
Many write-ins against you? Or were there any write-ins?
There were a few. There were a few write-ins. Yeah. And I would be curious. Like, you know, did Donald Duck make the write-in cut?
Right. Good space guy.
Yeah, good space guy.
Good space guy. Right. All the usual suspects.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Steamboat Willie was written in, I think.
Yeah.
Several past mayors of Vachon.
Yes. I wonder if Bubba was on the list.
Yeah.
The dude.
Whoever Bubba is.
Whoever Bubba is.
Yeah,
right,
who could that be?
Could be the horse. You never know, right?
Oh, my God.
And then mariner, backpacker, rower, electric vehicle owner, and indefatigable defender of democracy, Kevin Jones.
You know, the water was like glass this morning.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. The forecasts. I'm trying to calibrate which weather forecasts are the one that I should pay attention to. Because one of them said fog. And I get down there, there's no fog anywhere. Yeah. 2 days ago, yes. Today, no. And water like glass, spectacular.
Yeah. That's the way we took the crab boat out on Sunday. Finally, the Docton sort of boat launch is open. And so took it over there Sunday afternoon. And it was just like, it was like glass. Mm-hmm. It's just been amazing. So, and I'm historian Bruce Holman. So today's Truman Show, today is a Truman Show, which means we don't have a small talk guest. Why did we name it the Truman Show?
Well, because he has no small talk at all. I mean, that's it.
It's just big talk, right?
Just big talk, yeah, right.
I always think of the Truman Show movie when I think
Me too.
And it's sort of like,
I have to tell you, you know, I've only known maybe two other people named Truman in my whole life. Mm-hmm. And so when I went to that movie, Every time they said Truman, I went, what? Huh? What? Yeah. That was bad.
So when we have a Truman Show, it means we don't have a small talk guest, but we have time for the brieflies to discuss current events. But before we jump into that, let's talk about what went on the last week with the brieflies. So, Craig, you had a busy week.
I did. I had a fun-filled week of various events. Tuesday of last week, we had Professor Larry Hubble doing his fourth and final authoritarian rising lecture at the high school. That was good. I emceed that. Emceed? Maybe MC is not the right word. but that was, he was talking about Gene Hubble.
Wake it's up, the Craig. Solar flares. Coffee. It's the solar flares.
Oh, Gene Debs. And his protagonist, Woodrow Wilson. Very interesting. And then on Thursday, we had the legislators in town from the 34th District. We had Fitzgibbons, Alvarado, and Thomas. All three of them were here, and it was my honor to MC that as well. I thought that went well. That was at the high school. Friday at the station, right almost across the street from where we're at, just right downtown here, or uptown, we had Tim Couldn't Make It and various other musicians that played with them to have a goodbye to Rick Doms, who on Sunday left the island. He'd lived here for many years. It was kind of a bittersweet gathering. But it was great music, and the forum, or the venue over there at the station, is really wonderful. I think that's going to be a really great addition to our music forums and venues. And then finally, I went to the Coop on Saturday, I think it was, and a little sister, a group from off-island, tremendous, all women, and Rumor Has It played at the Coop, and it was a great night. So lots of good stuff.
Sounds like a great week. Amy, can you match that?
Ooh, can I match it? Let's see. Well, I also went to the legislative forum and was excited to hear our legislators pretty fired up about their jobs, particularly vis-a-vis protections for Washington residents with everything that's going on at the federal level. They definitely are planning to do as well as they can. Obviously, a state budget cannot fill the gap for a federal budget, but they're in the fight there, and they're thinking ahead. So it was really, really glad to hear from them about many things that impact Vashon. And one of the things, it was hosted by Islanders for Fair Action, put the thing together. And we asked about the new service contingency plan, because as we all know, if there's an outage anywhere in the entire WSF system, they've decided that the Triangle route will be the only place from which they pull boats to relieve the entire system. And we have been saying that's just not acceptable. So it was announced that there will be the rollout of a new service contingency plan in Q1 2026. So thanks to everyone who chirped about that and let Washington State Ferries and our legislators know that an island community should not be the first one to lose service when someone who can drive to their destination loses a convenience. Sorry, I'm a little spicy about that.
Well, you should be. That's right? Ridiculous.
Right? It is. Unacceptable. So we're glad to hear that change. And then yesterday, I flipped burgers last night at the Eagles because it's Burger Mondays now at the Eagles. I don't know. That's going to be rough for me because Monday night on shift and then waking up Tuesday morning was a little... I'm a little old for that these days. But it's my pleasure to do so because then I get a little scratch to be able to go and get my favorite bagel at Little Cup and get a lox bagel in the morning and a cuppa. So pretty good week overall. And then I had an entire weekend to rest. I kind of just did nothing this weekend.
Nice. Wow. Nice. Yeah.
Nice. I know. When you say match that, I'm like, I did nothing.
And I didn't get finished, right?
And I totally did not finish doing nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey, Kevin, how about you?
Well, you know, so Craig, those two events that Craig mentioned where he was on the the stage at the Vashon High School Theater twice last week. So I was there for Heroes because Bruce, you and Larry approached me some time ago in a coffee shop and and said, hey, are you interested? And we said yes. So yeah, four talks about the political heroes, public sector heroes, and all the challenges they face that we now seem to be, you know, history seems to be coming around again. So it was great to hear the perspective about how they address the situation, and maybe we can learn from that history.
The Briefleys were well represented during that series.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of Briefly action there. Yeah,
that's right.
Totally, totally. Right. And I went to the also the legislative session because you have to, you know, in my line of volunteerism. But I, in addition, Amy, to the things you said, housing was really a big issue, right? And I really felt that our legislators know what the issues are that we struggle with and how to address them. But a whole list of issues about housing, including the federal money takeaway, looking at recognizing that we have rural areas in the 34th Legislative District. I know they made that point, like, where's that? Oh, it's Vashon, pretty much. And trying to limit the number of houses purchased by corporations, down payment assistant, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. I thought was really super
all
good.
All great ideas and policies headed into a budget cycle with a lot of competing demands. Mm-hmm. The pie is one size and it is shrinking. Mm-hmm. But good, there are policy solutions out there that we can pursue. And it was awesome to hear those.
Yeah, and I've heard from a separate source that any piece of legislation in the 2026 legislative session starting on January 12th that requires more money is not going to happen. Yeah. Now, things can change, but apparently that's the guidance they're working to right now.
Yeah, and the cat is out of the bag. I think they're going to be really going after it, income tax. Mm-hmm. It is on the table. I think they'll be talking about tax reform in Washington, because, man, is our taxing system broken.
Mm-hmm. I did notice I got a smile from Craig.
Well, it was you could tell it was a bit of a touchy subject amongst the three representatives. They were finessing that slightly. Yeah. One was not finessing it, but the other two were.
I think dancing around the is a little more.
Dance around the third rail?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
No, you touch it. No, you touch
exactly,
it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yes. How many states don't have income tax?
Was it like three?
I think pretty limited. No, yeah. I don't know for sure.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's my sense.
Single
it's
digits.
Limited. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Well, now that most of us at the table are retired, we don't have any income, so we don't have to worry
about that. Yeah, bring it on.
Exactly.
Yeah. They also make note that they talked about food security, another issue of concern. Mm-hmm. And they also talked about immigration. And I noted in my notes here that they talked about potentially trying to close the Northwest Immigrant Detention Center in Tacoma. Mm-hmm. And I think I would be remiss in probably not saying they've been working to see what they can do about that. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if there's other solution sets because it's still running. But I did just hear the other day that there was a on the Oregon coast in a small town, right?
Newport. I was going to talk about that.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. I'll leave that for later then. I also went to the Vashon Island School District Gala fundraiser, which was spectacular at the O Space. A good friend, Carol Lake, invited us. Susie and I, and with Carol's family, and had a great evening, and the phenomenal support for schools on this island. You don't necessarily see it unless you sit in a crowd of, I don't know, there were 20 tables, 8 to 200 people, finding ways to make sure that money got into the coffers to make sure that the kids got good education and plenty of support. So it's great to see.
Great. Sounds like a good week.
It's very good.
Yeah, right. Truman, how about you?
Well, I attended the legislators' talk as well and was very impressed with all three of them. But the thing that really blew me away was Craig's blue suede shoes. I mean, he knocked it out of the park with those blue suede shoes. I'm telling you.
I can't seem to get out of those.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
did
it was really.
Did he sing?
He did not sing. I was disappointed that he didn't sing. But no, it was a very, very enlightening, I thought. I was really impressed. And then my wife had an early morning doctor's appointment on Monday. And so rather than take a chance on the ferries and, you know, making it in time, we went over and spent the night in Tacoma and had a nice dinner and went to see Nuremberg. And if you haven't seen that movie, I highly recommend it. It is really,
it's coming to the island.
Yeah, and when it does, boy, don't miss it. It is really excellent. Of course, Russell Crowe is...
Very timely.
Yeah.
Accountability.
Exactly. Exactly. It is really... Well, you'll go see it and see. And the thing about Newport that you were starting to talk about, Kevin, is they have pulled the helicopter, the Coast Guard helicopter, out of that area. And I don't know where they moved them to, but they moved them away from Coos Bay. And, not Coos Bay, Newport, which is a little bit south of Coos Bay. But anyway, that is amazing to me. And they were going to turn the old hangar into a nice facility, a holding facility. Mm-hmm. And the little town of 10,000, I mean, about like us, I think they said around 800 or 900 people showed up at a meeting to go, what the heck are you guys doing? You know, really, really had an important meeting about that. I'm really curious to ask Captain Joe about it.
Well, you've got to have some place to store the migrants and their cattle.
The cattle in particular.
Oh, right, the cattle. The cattle.
Yeah. Have you seen the picture of them trying to push the cow over the fence?
The memes are coming out fast and furious.
Yeah. Oh, they are. It's amazing.
Well, I mean, you know what? All those agriculture workers down in Oregon that they're gonna, you know, round up. Then what happens to our prices? This is the most ridiculous.
Absolutely ridiculous. You know, as a son of a cattle rancher, I am appalled at what our leaders are doing with this whole thing, bringing cattle in from South America. Ridiculous. Yeah, right. Just ridiculous.
It's not happening.
Yeah. Anyway, that was it for me.
All right. My week was pretty quiet. As a history nerd, of course, Ken Burns' new series, The American Revolution, is just, that's spending most of my evenings watching Ken Burns and trying to figure out what's good and what's not good about it and what a great job he does with sort of weaving together all the themes going on. And then this weekend, of course, the Huskies just blew out Purdue, and the Seahawks lost to L.A. And you just think, I think the Huskies and the Seahawks are in this inverse relationship, because the week before, the Seahawks blew out the Cardinals, and the Huskies, a squeaker loss to Wisconsin. And it's sort of like, guys, get together. Mm-hmm. Let's win them all. Mm-hmm. But again, that's being a football fan sort of traps you into that.
If I may, I have to mention one of my former employers and one of my alma maters. Mm-hmm. They played last night, Gonzaga basketball. Mm-hmm. They played Southern Utah, and the score, I think, was 125-52.
Oh my gosh.
Is there a mercy rule there? Come on. Right.
I think that Gonzaga had their third string in. In order to try to keep the score down.
Wow. Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. That's just amazing. So let's see what's happened in history on this day, just some interesting kind of things. 1626, 400 years ago, St. Peter's Basilica in Rome was consecrated. So give you a sense of how long the Catholic Church has had magnificent gold structures sort of supporting their sort of ability to proselytize the world.
It is amazing also how structures were built like that without
cranes.
Internal combustion engines, hydraulics.
No, it is amazing. So 1883, the United States and Canada, in a sort of move of mutual sort of cooperation, actually adopted a set of 4 standard time zones across North America. So we go back to that standard times, those 4 zones, and all because of railroads.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
That's the whole reason for standard time, so that railroads could run on time and people would know when the train was coming.
Yeah. Speaking of running on time, my cousin was coming from Dallas last night. Was due in about 7:30, I think, in the evening. Got in at 1:53 this morning.
Wow.
It was running way late.
Oh, he arrived same day, though.
Did she?
No, so according to Washington, according to Washington State Ferries, that's 100% performance.
They arrived. On time, right?
Amazing. Package
delivered. Oh no, on time. No, it doesn't matter. Did it go? Did the boat go? Then it doesn't matter. Did you arrive to your doctor's appointment 5 hours late? Whatever.
We'll make it work.
So now I'll just have to jump in because Backbone Campaign is advocating for years to improve rail transit.
Right.
And one of the things that they have on the Cascade Amtrak, which actually runs north-south, right, from Bellingham down to Portland, is a set of criteria that they have to meet certain performance standards.
Yeah.
And so their focus for this legislative session is meet those legislature-required performance standards. And, oh, by the way, let's do something about east-west transit over the Cascades. So, and the reason that they're behind it is because that is a improvement on climate change. Rail is more efficient in terms of single passenger vehicles. So.
Yeah, it's much more.
So 1903 is when the United States took control of the Panama Canal Zone. In 1928, Steamboat Willie was the first sound-synchronized animated cartoon that sort of began Walt Disney's sort of rise to the prominence that Disney has today. And then in 1978, the Jonestown mass suicide took place, and sort of the phrase, drink the Kool-Aid, became sort of prominent. So do not drink the Kool-Aid.
Whatever
you do, right? So today's Truman Show, is we're going to sort of talk about, and I suggested to these guys, let's talk about an article in the Atlantic magazine that Thomas Friedman, one of my favorite writers, wrote just a couple weeks ago, entitled "Welcome to Our New Era." What do we call it? And he posited the idea that we have the Cold War era from 1945 to 1989 and the fall of the Berlin Wall, and then what we call the post-Cold War era, sort of from 1989, and he ends that in 2020. And so what do we call the age that we're living in today?
I've got it.
You got it.
I've got it, yeah. The stupid era.
The stupid era.
When the whole population was stupid.
Not the whole population.
Well, a lot of the population. Enough of the population to make a difference.
The majority of the voting population. So what do we call from 2020 on? And it's interesting he chose 2020 because as the end of the post-Cold War era, because he sort of saw three major events. The U.S. withdraws from Afghanistan, which he sees as sort of the beginning of the collapse of sort of an American unipolar dominance in the post-war war, World War II era. And then the beginning of the Ukraine war, which sort of the first major European land war since World War II. And then China's emergence as an economic, military sort of rival to the United States. And he posits this all in terms of moving from a binary system, sort of the Cold War, U.S. versus Russia, to a multiple interconnected system of relationships that we have today. And so I think, you know, and then he adds to it the fact that we all have smartphones and computers and sort of constant connectivity. We're all connected all the time, maybe too much of the time. And so that he's sort of asking us, what do we call the era we're living in? And then he broke it down into some concepts like environmentalist, the environment. And Kevin, for you, the question sort of is, environmentalists are beginning to use the term polycrisis to describe what we're experiencing, not just global climate change, but all the things that are adding to that. And of course, a lot of anthropologists are starting to talk about it as the Anthropocene era, the era of human impact on the world. How does the U.S. denial of climate change fit into that? And what do we do here on Vashon?
Well, let's see. A little bit on perspective first, maybe before going there, because, we all know the information age. And the information age was created as you mentioned, in our connectivity, things moving quickly, but also computers are getting faster. One thing that I learned in the last decade of my career was that the reason that you can have higher bandwidth communication systems is because the computer processors are faster. Hmm. And I was thinking, I think just more aperture or something like that. But no, it's the processing. And the ability, as you mentioned, for us to carry a computer around in our pocket or sitting here on our desks, which is essentially unimaginable, you know, when the information age started up. And then the... But I think that the collaboration, the alliances, that basically were there during World War I and World War II, and existing alliances today, says that while I appreciate Tom's perspective, we've been building to this for a long time. I think that his article, when I read through it, it was like, okay, well, this is sort of recognized where we're at, not mm-hmm. just that somehow a light switch got thrown, right? All of these things we now should be aware of and recognize, because those are the things that people think about. Those are the things that sometimes aggravate us. Mm-hmm. Those are the things that we maybe grasp for hope, that we can come together in a way that's supportive and mutually beneficial to all of us, although, that sometimes looks a long ways off. Mm-hmm. But on the climate thing, the pendulum is going to swinging in a significant way around which energy generation choices going to make sense for the world. Mm-hmm. And the oil and gas industry isn't the biggest industry in the planet. I actually looked it up. It's like number 7 or 8 behind things like information and, commodities and things like that. But it's one of the bigger ones. And they are, I'm hoping, in a death spiral because we are, that is, as a friend of mine says, that is the most expensive way to power us because of all the consequences that come along with it, and consequences that we have not even seen yet, and we're not even sure we can imagine the consequences. But what we can do on Vashon is things like we are quite prominent in terms of solar power on this island. We're very prominent in terms of number of electric vehicles. King County just literally a couple weeks ago approved their strategic climate action plan. We are now starting to take a look at the elements of that plan that relate to Vashon. Which organizations on Vashon are already taking climate action, but they don't call it that because it's just in their charter. I already mentioned Backbone Campaign. So which island organizations are actually contributing to the success of a climate action plan that could come together around a single table and talk about, here's what we can do, and here's what that climate action plan looks like here on this island, which we know we're not in the middle of the bell curve, right? Vashon's never in the middle of the bell curve. We're always off to one side because this is our unique geography and, in some cases, our unique and culture and our unique folks who live on this place. But I think there's a lot to be done, and every bit we do is good. At this point, I would love to say that we can avert the climate crisis. Today, I think it's every step we take will make it less bad. But we need to take those steps, and it is urgent, and hopefully these information systems can inspire people to come together in a positive way to make something good things happen.
So as long as we're kind of zooming up, I'm kind of wondering what climate futurists are doing and thinking, what does the post-electrification age look like? Because we are rapidly running out of lithium, cobalt, all of these things that we need to, drive electrification forward. So what's next?
Hydrogen is one possible solution.
I was just going to say hydrogen. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hydrogen used, because hydrogen won't power my phone. It will not create my cell phone.
Oh, but it will.
Right?
But it will.
But what chips will be my cell in my cell phone?
There is that. But, right? But the hydrogen and fuel cells, that is the most efficient way to produce electricity I think there is.
It's not, not that we'll get away from electricity. We'll get away from the way that we produce
electricity. Right, but what do we do? What are folks thinking, right? Like, we need batteries, right? Electricity needs a battery. Electricity, right? Solar. I'm thinking futurist, right? As long as we're thinking climate, what do we do when we don't have enough material for solar panels anymore?
Well, batteries are made out of different materials. Yeah. Silicon. Things that are much greater supply.
I can tell you that the next big leap in technology is going to be battery technology. Mm-hmm. We've already talked about that. The batteries that we have today are going to be, people are going to look at those like they were a horse and buggy, because the capacity and the duration that they're going to get out of batteries is going to far exceed anything we're doing today. Mm-hmm. And that's just a matter of technology.
That does beg another question, which has always bothered me a little bit. And I love your optimism, Truman.
Yeah.
But technology may not always be the answer. Mm-hmm. We may fall behind the power curve on that one. We have to be careful about relying on technology. Certainly, there's a great effort to make batteries out of different materials that are much, much better, and to make solar panels that are much, much more efficient, as the Chinese have been doing, and powering tremendous numbers of homes in China recently. But I'm always careful. I remember in college, I had Professor Ehrlich, the environmentalist, and he said, be careful about relying on technology to solve all of our problems. It may not happen all the time. So we do mm-hmm. have to be cautious and look forward to that. We can't go on, you know, burning fuel and you know, using energy in the hopes that tomorrow we'll have a new technology. Mm-hmm.
But I do really acknowledge, Amy, your question, because there are shortages, right? I mean, you can't, I don't know the prospects of producing like, you know, synthetic lithium or whatever we need to produce, right? But there is actually, I heard recently of a group who, I think they're working with the Puyallup tribe. I don't know how mature it is. There's some very large battery systems. Right now, batteries, when you think about like a Tesla battery wall and what have you, you know, it's got maybe, you know, 48 hours worth of battery storage. Batteries are great in between the time when the sun shines and the wind blows, right? But they're not something you can go, oh, a month. But this other battery system, which does not require those kind of earth materials that you were talking about, can go for apparently really long time. Mm-hmm. And they're huge. They're like containers full of the chemicals that produce the battery. But the motivation, and I don't know whether it will take off or not, because any one of these technologies can, you know, be successful or not. But the motivation is that we can have high energy density that can be produced for a long time from this battery without a huge amount of those rare earth minerals. Now, the chemicals are toxic, so, you know, there's trade-offs.
So, but how about free lunch.
How about the atomic battery that they're talking about that will last for 20,000 years with no charge? I mean, that sort of technology is what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. That's going to be the next big step.
Well, the question's in my self-interest because we're going to be talking about my friend Andy, the AI, coming up here, right? And of course, AI and its consumption is
massive.
A behemoth, right?
Yeah, massive. Mm-hmm. Just massive, yeah. So one of the other things that Friedman talks about is sort of the change in politics. And a lot of political scientists talk about the shift away from sort of alliance politics and the return of geopolitics. And we see that very clearly going on, particularly with the Trump administration, the way it's sort of shaping American foreign policy. You know, we're seeing, you know, sort of fracturing alliances, fracturing states, you know, just the sort of collapse of the international order, if you will, that dominated after World War II and was put in place to prevent another World War II. And that's beginning to collapse around us. And my sense, Craig, to you is sort of like, what do we do? How does a retreat from the United States' reliance on the rule of law, both internationally and domestically, how's that going to shape our future?
Ubiquitously.
That's a great word. Everywhere, all the time, every place.
Omnipresent. Yeah. I don't know where to begin on that one. It's, you know, there is a fracturing. It's becoming more and more a matter of power politics as opposed to the alliances that we've formed. I mean, we're either dropping out of or ignoring treaties that have we been in long standing? You've got countries now that are turning away from us because they can't rely on us. They're afraid that we're not going to abide by our treaties. You have a president who abides by the law in the breach, as opposed to you know, most of the time. What, this morning? Just this morning. two things I came across real quickly. The Trump said that he wants the ABC reporter, who asked him a question this morning about why he didn't want to release the Epstein files on his own at all, and now, you know, he's made the flip, but that the legislature should vote on it. But he was asked why don't you just release them? You can release them. He wants that reporter removed from his her job. That's where we are with regards to free speech, you know, in America. The other thing is, the good side of that is we do have some bumper guards that seem to be holding up. We got these rubber bands that stretch and hopefully don't break, which is primarily the courts. I can't remember which division it is, but the lawsuit that Trump brought against CNN for I don't know how many hundreds of millions of dollars, the court said no, that's gone. You can't be bringing that lawsuit for the way that they edited their news. I mean, you edit news. I mean, that's the way it is. Any of us who've appeared in the news regularly say, you know, I know they're going to throw 95% of that on the floor. I hope they pick the good 5%.
Exactly, where I'm
looking good. Or,
been there, done that.
Yeah, that's right. You have the United States is still the most powerful country in the world militarily and economically. But I'm not sure how long economically it's going to be with the alliances that are being made around the world. And militarily, I'm very concerned with our walking away from NATO to a certain degree and the unilateral activities, for example, that we're taking in the South Atlantic to blow up boats that are supposedly coming from Venezuela to the United States without really any proof that's been shown. You know, the United States is the ever-present example of democracy and fairness. And when they fail to set that example, actively fail to set that example and go the other direction, I cannot say I'm quite as optimistic about our future as Kevin was optimistic about the environment a moment ago. It's getting to a really critical stage, and it goes from, you know, one-on-one, people. I swear, I think people run our four-way stop more often now because of disrespect for the law, because it's it's accepted. It's so common, us taking on Venezuela and Putin taking on marching into Ukraine. I mean, it's a whole change of ethics that we're being confronted with.
I'm not sure that I agree that it's a change of ethics. Look at what happened to the Native American people here in the United States.
Always been bad, is what you're saying.
Yeah, it really hasn't changed. I mean, it's just
we're saying the quiet part loud.
Yes, we're just a little more global, but we've always disregarded treaties. I mean, that's part of what we do.
But I have not seen it on a scale.
On a global scale, right. Yeah, I agree.
Well, and it's really a change away from the conscious attempt to build an international order after World War II because of the horrors of World War I and World War II. You know, most historians look at World War I and World War II as just one war. It really was just a break of sort of truce in the middle. But essentially, they're tied together as one global conflict. And they were horrendous in their impact. And so people emerged from the end of those two great wars and just said, hey, we need to do things differently. That's what's starting to collapse, that sort of agreement. Yeah, Kevin.
And it'll be interesting to see. Hopefully we're not going to have a World War III, but Ukraine and Russia, are certainly neither side seems to be willing to bury the hatchet, if you will, and come to the table. But I think that I might take a little bit of an exception with the article in terms of the world order's collapsing. The world order's changing, mm-hmm. in my view, because mm-hmm. look at what's already happened. Now we have countries joining NATO, right? Mm-hmm. Sweden, Finland. Now in NATO. They weren't there before. We're seeing new economic alliances being built. And I look at one thought came to mind is that, yes, it's very disruptive. There's one bad actor, right, who's throwing the alliances into the trash bin, but mm-hmm. it's also the biggest economy in the world, you know, the United States, throwing those things. So everybody gets impacted. I mean, it's probably, I'm sure there's a few countries that maybe are saying, okay, thank goodness I don't trade with those guys, and maybe they can continue on. But so I think it's hugely disruptive. But I also don't envision it's like all international alliances are going to be thrown aside. I think that they're going to be rebuilt and reshaped. It's maybe not in the image that we would hope. And I would have no idea, right, whether or not the United States will emerge from all of this. There have been so many challenges, like in my lifetime, over, you know, whether the U.S. economy is going to prevail. You know, when the Japanese started building really quality cars, right, we're like, oh, boy, there goes our auto industry. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that didn't happen. So I don't know that we're ready to throw the hat in yet, but it's certainly a cause for concern about where we're headed.
Are we getting ready to call this the post-colonial era? Are we in the post-colonial chaos right now?
Mm. Vladimir is being very colonial, I think, right now. Yeah. So I don't know.
Well, he's trying, right? Trying, but yeah. I mean, compared to England, right? Like America, like you know, kind of the North Atlantic countries that created a mm-hmm. global colonial order, right? Those colonies are essentially fragmenting, mm-hmm. right? And there's new geopolitics on the rise, and we are, as the colonists, clutching our pearls and saying, my goodness, no one, but we're, you know, we're in charge here. We're the ones who set the order. We know what's best. Mm-hmm. How can these other folks possibly, you know, create a world order that may, you know, may result in something better? Mm-hmm. That said, there's a lot of bad actors out there right now, right? A lot of thumbs on the scale.
One other thing that Craig mentioned is the courts mm-hmm. being the rubber bands that stretch but don't break. But there's another force. It's the people. Mm-hmm. And just the little arc of history is that, you know, if you listen to Invisible Leadership, they talk about, well, we started with hands off, and then we went to No Kings, and then No Kings 2. Every incremental, large-scale national mm-hmm. protest has incremented, added another couple of million people. Right now we're up to 7 million, which I think we need to the 3.5% blah, blah rule. You have to get to like 11 million. Okay, so the trajectory is reasonable, right? You could very well go there. But after No Kings 2, the groups of the leaders got together with all of their followers, and it was like, what's next? And it was like, well, you know, we're going to think about that. We're really kind of tired, and we're going to put our heads together. And there are things that are being worked on, right? Well, but here's the thing, is that in my feed, it's like, oh, there's going to be 3 days of protests against Target in West Seattle starting on Black Friday. Mm-hmm. There's this thing going on here. There's this thing going on there. I see, like, literally every 2 or 3 days, here's another protest that's being organized. So I don't think it's like, we had a great, huge protest. Now we're all tired and burned out. People are not tired and burned out. They're just ready to continue moving on.
I accept that friendly amendment totally about the people. And Bruce, you had referenced the American Revolution series, and they really made that point there at the beginning about how the people decided. They were the ones who confronted this the greatest power in the world at the time, mm-hmm. and prevailed on a scale where the colonists thought of themselves as all different countries, and they all came together individually mm-hmm. on a person-by-person basis initially. It's amazing. So
we have a new fourth branch. The utter collapse of the Fourth Estate in doing its job has been filled in by the fifth column of people, right?
So, Kevin, what's going on November 22nd in D.C.? How does that sort of fit into this?
I'm not sure that I'm up to speed on the details of what's going on there November 22nd.
Oh, I think there's sort of a big sort of organized... what I've seen is an attempt to organize people to come and directly lobby Congress on the weekend of the 22nd, 23rd, you know, with a mass protest in downtown Washington on the Mall, and then, you know, actually going to see your congressperson kind of thing.
I think it seems like I've seen an invitation to travel, and which is not something that I'm keen on doing these days, so I probably have dismissed that one. But I think it's part and parcel of the of what we're seeing is the menu of opportunities for people to stand up. And I'll have to just mention one other thing. Early on, like, which means 5 months ago, is we're talking about, oh, we're going to go to this protest. It's going to be in Olympia because, you know, it's the Capitol. They have the Capitol Police. You know, it's no guns, blah, blah, blah. And people are like, I said, well, I wrapped my cell phone in tinfoil because I didn't, like, want to be tracked going there. So, right, there's fear. There's fear and justifiable fear, but the fear isn't playing out. I mean, in other words, we see in a few isolated incidents where people are indeed being, you know, captivated and thrown into the back of a van, right? But no Kings II, peaceful protest. I mean, amazing number of people, like no arguments. People are there in unity. So the idea that I'm sitting on the sidelines because I'm afraid that something might happen to me is a reasonable fear, but not one that is likely to cause any particular personal injury. So the thing of it is that in order to make the difference, we need to show that the people really are able to come together, just like the Burns Histories series, right? And we have to replay that in order to prevail. And so that's, I think, the challenge of our times.
Craig, how do you read this sort of concept, and very much part of the Declaration of Independence, that sort of no one is above the law, and all of a sudden we've created this environment in which certain people seem to be above the law, and that's always been the case to some extent anywhere, but, you know, particularly right now, many people in this administration seem to be ignoring, you know, legal orders and blatantly sort of breaking the law. What are consequences? How do you
power corrupts and total power? You know, there's this tremendous power tripping. People don't give up power and back off power once they get it, and they find that they can get what they want, even by violating the law. And when they have all of the levers with regards to the law, they have a conservative group of Supreme Court justices. They have the entire Department of Justice, Federal Department of Justice. They have many state legislatures. Excuse me. The law is being pushed aside because there really is no limit on people's ability to rationalize their actions and believe that what they're doing is in the common good, or at least in their own good.
Well, all those boat guys are bad, you know. Those, I mean, you know. Yeah.
Whether they're fishing or not, right?
Exactly.
That's right. You rationalize anything. They're the enemy.
But
it
all relies on a certain level of competence, doesn't it?
Yeah. Critical thinking, one might say.
White men have been failing up for, you know, since 2000. You know, it's just
generations.
You know, I just look at it from the, you know, perspective of, you know, a woman and folks of color I know, and, you know, it just of course the old saying, right, first they came for, and you know, straight white men just never thought it meant them, right? And this has been going on since it hasn't been going on, right? Yeah. And now it finally got around to, right? They finally have unmasked the power. They ran the hand, right? They shot the moon, and nobody looked up, right? Everybody was saying, hey, like, did anybody have an ace? Anyone? Right? And the people who did have aces, no, what are other, you know, white men going to do to me? Here, you know, whatever. You know, I just, I, not many of us are surprised, right? Like, we are horrified at where we are living now, and now we're all in it. But, you know, it just, the veil of surprise was never something, as we look at the, you know, the halls of Congress and who was there. And, you know, it was always just sort of acceptable, right? The level of corruption, look, think back to the Bush-Cheney days, think back to Reagan, right? Like, and now we sort of, you know, have in post, you know, lionized the Cheneys and the Bushes and said they were doing the exact same stuff that Trump was doing. They just weren't publicizing it. They were, you know, it was done quietly. It was done sort of, there was always the veneer of respectability, right? As America colonized the world and they fleeced the country while they were doing it, right? So it's just, you know, it's, it is distressing and alarming at how far it has gone now. But, you know, even 20, 30 years ago, if you'd said this was where it was going to go, I don't know anyone who would have been surprised when, you know, W stole the election in 2000 and you said this is where we're going to end up. Right.
You know, moral evolution, I think, occurs in terms of eons as opposed to years or decades. We all seem to think it's a nice straight line or maybe even a jagged line, but generally going up. No, I don't think so. I guess I'm old enough now to know that the horrors that occurred during World War I and II and are still occurring around the world in many places, we are evolving rapidly in huge chunks in the technology area, but our moral development has lagged far behind.
I look at the language that our politicians and our people in power are using these days, and I find it appalling. And that's just that's part of that in my mind.
But you know, that's what they always thought of you, right? They just didn't say it. Like, as a,
well, of course.
Yeah, right?
Well, like, of course.
Those are,
yeah.
That is what the people in power have always thought of us.
Of course.
They just didn't say it. And that's something you learn early, you know, when you're not in the majority.
Before we leave the law and order and the justice system and the failures of the justice system, the one thing that I heard last week and I will advocate for is that the pardon power of the president and the notion that having a two-thirds Senate approval of anybody on the pardon list is thinking makes a lot of sense. Yeah. And, you know, this administration has pardoned amazing thousands of people, right? And I heard, I think the news was like five or six of them who were the insurrectionists at the Capitol on January 6th had been pardoned, and now they're in trouble with the law for very serious offenses. And the notion that you can see all the cronies getting pardoned, and then the other fear of last time he was in office was, you know, he would step down, the vice president Pence would go in, and Pence would pardon Trump, and then he's off the hook, right? Well, Pence wouldn't probably do that, but it wouldn't surprise me that Vance would. So somewhere along the lines, pulling the rug out from under this unlimited pardon power, in my view, it may be a step towards a moral. It still won't ramp in people's immorality, right, when they have an opportunity to do something terrible. But maybe at least it'll put another another guardrail in place.
We can only hope at some point, right? Yeah, because it's getting out of control, if you will. So, Amy, let me ask you, one of the things demographers talk about is how, particularly in the United States, but really around the world, we're really seeing the emergence of what they often talk about as polymorphic communities. I mean, communities are much more diverse. I mean, even you go into the Midwest of the United States, which used to be just sort of lily white, sort of, you know, farming communities, and all of a sudden there's these immigrant groups and people of color, all sorts. You know, and of course, you know, women have developed a much more important role in society. You know, how is that? How do you see that playing out on Vashon? And how do you see that playing out in terms of developing affordable housing? That's sort of your ballpark. How do you see us working through that?
Well, I think, you know, it is interesting to take that global scale and zoom down. And again, kind of going back to that whole potentially post-colonial, right, colonial sort of that paternalistic, you know, benevolent dictatorship or kingships, right? Where you're under the aegis of, you know, of our colonies, and so you'll be cared for, right? And so there's been sort of that global centralization of care, and obviously in some nation states it works great, right? Like socialist care works great. But I think right now what particular we're looking at, you can bring it all the way down into Vashon, is the, you know, is it's a web of care for our citizens, right? If we want to go anywhere as a whole, we have to do it as a whole, and we have to take care of each other, and all of the parts of the whole have to be cared for in order to do it. And so, you know, just right now, last month, you look at, you know, what the community reaction with the SNAP benefits, right? And so, you know, there was an instant sort of recognition of this part of our community is going to be harmed, and therefore our whole community is going to be harmed. So how can we share, you know, to sort of ameliorate that harm, right? And Vashon very much has that sense, right? That you know, that with Vashon Be Prepared, with all of our social services, right? We sort of understand the concept, because we're on an island, of if we don't take care of each other, no one will, right? No exactly. One's coming to help us. And there is, you know, sort of with the fall of the quote unquote benevolent dictators, right? We're sort of understanding in that we have to take care of each other. Now that can be come across very poorly, right, in the sense of like nationalists, right? If you look at sort of, you know, siloing yourself off, you know, or you can sort of spread that out over a global concern, right, and say within each unit, we care for each unit. And then you go up, you have the, you know, the little town unit and the city unit and the state, right, this sort of Cartesian thing. But if we are whole and healed at each one of those units, then it is whole and healed all the way up. Right. And there are a lot of countries that, you know, have sort of lived under the colonial yoke that have done that to the very best of their ability, because they've understood, right, that no one is going to give them food. Right. The benevolent dictator is only going to give them enough to survive if they can, and if they so choose to that day. Right. So I hope one of the things that we can take and spread is this sense that, you know, that care for our neighbors is care for ourselves. Right. Because we all act in our best interests. That's, you know, that's a human thing to do. But we are, quote unquote, successful as a human race because we have learned how to care for each other. Right. And how to build dreams together and imagine a better future. Right. That's one of the things as humans that we uniquely do in the animal kingdom, is imagine a better future and be able to share that imagination of a better future with our co-humans. So I'm curious to see if we can get out from under this sort of toxic Cartesianism and nationalism and jingoism, but sort of take that sense of, you know, what happens if we care for each other and we make do with what we have and then reproduce that, what can happen? I'm not certain that that's what we can do. But certainly when we look at, you know, the core needs that we have as humans, right? The need to be needed, the need to be housed, the need to be fed. We are a great example of coming together to do that as best as we can. So I welcome our new taco truck overlords, or, you know, whoever is going to be coming in a certain way. But I don't know if I am, and I think I am hopeful that as we do this, that we are going to have to learn how to take care of each other, right?
I'm fascinated with Mandami in New York City and sort of this. I mean, he won a very successful campaign on affordable housing, you know, sort of access to food, you know, getting rid of food deserts, those kind of things. Do you see us learning on Vashon, and how are we doing that on Vashon? Do we see rent control on Vashon? What's the kind of things that are going to create affordable housing and, right, you know, affordable access to food for everyone on Vashon?
To extend the metaphor, I do believe that it is difficult to dismantle the master's house with the master's tools, right? And mm-hmm. So sort of our socialist communists, the Americanized socialist communists, are trying to use the master's tools, rent control, these things that work in some ways, but in other ways, you know, the law of unintended consequences down the road, because political winds change, cannot you know, the promise of that solution can't be fulfilled. So I think there are some troublesome pieces, but what we see are the people coming together and saying, right? Just to Kevin's point, this is not acceptable, right? Very much like we saw in the early 20th century in America, right? The mass is saying this is not acceptable.
Yep. Time for change.
Yeah.
So, Kevin, we're nearly to the end of our time. What's coming up next week?
So we have a pair of guests next week, Jen and Rocky. And Jen is a member of the Vashon Murray Community Council Board. Rocky is his career is doing ecological system rejuvenation. And if you were at the Land Trust last week, I think it was, you heard Rocky talk about streams. Well, Jen and Rocky are going to talk about Quartermaster Harbor, Portage, and Tramp Harbor. When they join us next week. And so look forward to hearing what they have to say.
Great. That should be fascinating.
I have one quick announcement. Yes. The vote was 427 to 1.
Wow.
427 to 1.
To release.
To release the votes.
And was there a write-in? And who was the one?
there is.
I'm not talking about the airport.
Yeah, there you go.
How many abstentions, right?
Yes. Who unity, was the one?
Unity to protect themselves, I'm sure.
All right. For Truman, Kevin, Craig, Amy, I'm Bruce, and we thank you for listening. We'll see you again next week on The Brown Briefly.